Well, hey everybody, welcome to episode 175 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Coldwell Banker is rooted in the legacy of our founder, renowned businessman and philanthropist, Marvin Pomeranz. We continue to tell his story through our love of people, homes, and the communities we serve. Our integrity guides our focus to empower people to make the best real estate decisions possible. We pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and the most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. Well, I've got a couple guests lined up for you tonight. Later on, I'll be playing an interview that I actually pre-recorded yesterday with a gal who's a former basketball star here from the CIML. I'm sure you'll recognize her name. But yeah, I pre-recorded that interview yesterday, so I'll play that for you later on. But right now, my first guest is an Ankeny resident who has written a book about his state high jump championship in Illinois. He grew up in Springfield, Illinois, and recently released his book titled Jump and Shout, Lessons Learned on the Path to a State Championship. He did that earlier this month. He won an Illinois Class AA high jump in 1996 as a member of the Lanphier High School track and field team. And he is married to former Ankeny track standout and Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union Hall of Famer, Laura Ashoff. He is TJ Jumper. TJ, thanks for coming in and joining me. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you bet. Well, congratulations on the book, and I appreciate the copy here that you brought for me. I look forward to reading that later on. You know, that has to be very exciting to see all of your hard work come to fruition and finally have it published. I know the book has only been out for a couple of weeks now, but what has the response been like?
It's been actually more successful than I had hoped. I did a book launch and took about 100 books, and they were sold out in that first day. So I've had to order actually a second and third shipment of books that come in.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I'll be honest with you, you know, I'm a writer and I've thought about possible topics for a book at various times in the past. And I played a couple sports in high school. I played basketball and tennis. You know, I never won a state title or anything like that. But I was a varsity starter. You know, our team's had some pretty good success. And I guess I never thought about writing about it, any of those experiences. So what motivated you to write this particular book?
Yeah, so during my dissertation for education administration, I mentioned to Laura that at some time I wanted to write a book. At that time, I thought it was going to be an educational book. And really, this one just kind of fell together. I was at my Grandpa Jumper's funeral and didn't realize he was in one of the World Wars, actually. He was the phone operator during D-Day.
Oh, wow.
And so we didn't know about that, and I was kind of trying to figure out, why don't we know something about that? And then I was looking at my dad. My dad was a varsity basketball coach for 36 years in Illinois, and he has so many stories. So I thought, you know, I had to start jotting some things down just to make sure some of my past successes and learning lessons, you know, I just have down for later generations or that kind of thing. And so at my daughter's tournaments or that kind of thing, I'd in a hotel room watching TV, bored. So I just started writing them down. And after I got so far, it was like, oh, that could be a chapter. Oh, that's a chapter. And then I got so far along, it's like, I need to just finish it now. And then talking with Laura, talking with my dad and some friends, after they've read it, they said, you need to publish this.
Well, yeah, I read on your website that when you won your high jump championship, you became the first male athlete in almost 30 years from Springfield to win a high school track and field state title. You said that you had many trials, tribulations, setbacks, and successes that ultimately led to winning the high jump title. Now, I don't want you to give your whole book away,
yeah.
But can you give us just a taste of some of the obstacles that you felt like you had to overcome, you know, that you write about in the book?
Yeah. So I'm from more of Springfield, Illinois, and on the north side of Springfield, there's a couple of high schools. And I compare it to like a Des Moines East type of school. And I was fortunate that I had a great track coach. But many things happened over the 4 years. One of the big things that happened my junior year, I was ranked number one in the state by about 4 or 5 inches. It started raining. I slipped and ended up, I was in last place and then had to jump every height. And I ended up in fifth, you know. And so, you know, going into my senior year, that was really when, you know, I was, I don't want to say obsessed, but close to that of that's what I wanted to do. That was my dream. The name of the book comes from when I won, after I won the high jump title the next day, the State Journal Register paper posted Jump and Shout, TJ Wins. And it was a play off the excitement of That buildup of emotion and that pumping of the fist and the screaming that we see at a lot of big athletic events. And so the book is really not only chronicles some of those life lessons, but also one of my biggest passions is helping kids, you know. And so I wanted to put down those lessons learned and also help them guide of how you can be successful and get your own jump and shout moment.
Oh, sure. Well, I think you kind of touched on this already a little bit in your process of writing the book. But I mean, how long did it take you to write the book? I mean, once you decided to do it, you said you kind of already had some chapters formed, but yeah. did it come pretty easily for you?
So I was just writing down kind of my experiences. And then so it ended up being about a 2-year on and off process. The writing part is actually the easiest process. It's going into all the other things like the formatting, finding somebody to do the cover, a graphic designer, am I going to publish it myself or am I going to publish it with somebody else? I was fortunate to have a family friend that was an author of many books in Illinois about like Southern Illinois gangsters and tied to the Chicago mob and some unfiction books like that. So I relied heavily on him to give me advice and the pros and cons and how to do different things. You know, I probably in November it said, okay, I'm close to the finish line. So now I just need to push forward and get it done and make some decisions and that kind of thing.
Well, you said that your friend advised you on, so then did you end up self-publishing it or did you go through somebody?
Yeah, so I ended up, Laura and I created a publishing entity off our little side business we have with Jumper mm-hmm. Athletics. And so we ended up publishing myself through Amazon's KDP. So that way I could keep the rights of the book and then figured out kind of the advantages and disadvantages of if I went through a publishing company, which my mentor, you know, has a publishing company and said they would love to take it, but we went through the pros and cons of that. And so I ended up doing that and recently came to agreement with a wholesaler. So that way, if somebody wanted it from Barnes & Noble, they could order it from Barnes & Noble. If Barnes & Noble wanted it, they could have it in the stores, churches, schools. They could buy it through the wholesaler because Amazon's not a wholesaler.
Oh, okay. Well, you said that the writing was maybe the easiest part for
yeah.
you. I mean, did you have much experience as a writer?
No. Well, I had just written my dissertation, and I wouldn't say writing is my forte at all. So I had the editor who ended up was my mentor, so he kind of went through it. My kids kind of reviewed some of it, you know, from a grammar perspective, and had other people in the family look through it, had friends from college, some professional colleagues kind of read through it, give me advice, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, you talk about where the title of the book comes from, the jump and shout moment. And I'm sure when you were writing the book, you probably reflected on, you know, winning that state title all the time. But even today, I mean, do you think back to that moment very often?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I can tell the emotions, the feelings that I had for that were going on. Actually, there was, and I'll leave it for the book, but there was some drama during my senior year that I had to overcome in the competition. And I remember what my coach was doing. And part of the book's dedicated to my high school coach because he was such a great influence on me. And he was at the book launch and recently retired. And so it was nice to kind of give him some praise as well.
Well, I read in your bio that you were a 3-time state place winner in the event. So it was your senior year that you won, right?
Yes. Yep,
okay.
Yep.
So after placing, you know, twice previously, you know, were you kind of the favorite going in that last year? And did that put some added pressure on you?
Yeah. Yeah. So my sophomore year was actually, if you look back at the high jump competitions, was the highest competition ever. Places 1 through 9. So my sophomore year, first place was 7'3", and I went 6'9" as a sophomore and took 8th, which a lot of state track meets, 6'9", 6'10" is going to win the event, right?
Oh, for sure. Here in Iowa, it would, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I ended up, I was the youngest competitor that year. And then my junior year, I was supposed to win, and I didn't win. And that kind of got me going, you know, fired up and focused for the next year, got 5th. And then my senior year, I was fortunate to go undefeated throughout the year in the high jump and then won the state title.
How did you get involved with the high jump in the first place? Was that something that, you know, had like in your family background or anything?
No. So actually, I'm the odd one in the family. Even though my dad was a varsity basketball coach, he's only about 5'5". My mom's 5'4", and I have a sister, older sister, that's about 5 foot. So at about 6'2", I'm sitting in all pictures from about 7 years old on.
Oh, wow.
My dad was loved baseball, so I played soccer, basketball, and baseball up until seventh grade. And the only reason I went out for track in seventh grade was because my good friends were all going out. And the story happens to be I was a hurdler long jumper at first, and we were in Taylorville, Illinois, and the coach said before the meet, you could pick one event that you want to try and just have fun with it. So I asked him if I could do the high jump just for fun, and he first told me no. He said we had two guys that will place in state. In Illinois, we have an actual state series. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a seventh grade state and eighth grade state, large school, small school. And we had two guys that would probably place. And I finally talked him into it, and he let me high jump, and I ended up winning in that competition. So then he kept me in it at what would be here called districts, but it was at seventh grade. I ended up tying the state record at that meet, and then at the state meet my seventh grade year, I broke the state record, clearing 5.8 in seventh grade. And so then it was eighth grade, I was still playing, I won again, still playing baseball. As a freshman in Illinois, I had to make a decision between track and baseball, because baseball is played in the spring in Illinois. And in eighth grade, also had to run the 800. And so I made a deal with my track coach, if I was going to go out for track, that I wouldn't have to run the 800 because it was such a tough event.
Sure.
That kind of thing. And he told me if I cleared 6'4" in my first ever meet in high school indoors, that I wouldn't ever have to run the 800. So on my third attempt indoors, I cleared 6'4" as a freshman at Western Illinois off the gym floor there.
Oh, wow.
In the meet. And so I stuck with track after that.
Well, I know you were a high school All-American, and then you went on to compete at Illinois, and that's where you met Laura, right?
Yeah, yep. I used to tell people I had to wait for her to slow down because she was so fast, and I was just a high jumper, so I could ask her out on a date.
Well, you said that you talked it over with her and your dad before you wrote the book, but, you know, when you first brought up the idea, what was her reaction?
She was like... She was questioning it a little bit, like, you know, is there going to be a market? And we were talking through things. But as she started to read the book, she was like, you know, this is really quality. I think you need to move forward. If your goal is to, one, chronicle what you're doing, but two, to help others. You know, if it helps one person, then it's worth the time and energy.
I know you and Laura and your dad have formed Jumper Athletics to help young athletes reach their goals and potential as an athlete and a person. And all three of you had been working and mentoring with student athletes on your own. And then last year, I believe you decided to collaborate and organize your services into one company. Is that kind of how it went?
Yeah. So Laura and I had been helping some, I was helping high jumpers, and then Laura was helping some hurdlers. And then we said, you know, and my dad is retired now, but he still works with some coaches on scouting reports and also working with shooting in Central Illinois. And so we were talking, and it just made sense to kind of collaborate and put our stuff together. And, you know, it's a side business for us, but it's a passion, right? So we love watching kids improve. And so Laura and I've started here in Central Iowa working with kids on sprinting, hurdling, long jump, and high jump. We had about 30 kids this winter working with us, and we have a few more, I'd say, clinics coming up in the spring.
Well, I know you guys offer a variety of services, you know, through your website. The website is tjjumper.com if people want to look it up on their own and kind of check it out. And you kind of touched on the kinds of kids that you work with, but do you want to talk about the different services that you provide?
Yeah. So one is, whether it's speaking to teams or that kind of thing about success or how to become successful, you know, we have that. We have our training that we do. This winter, we had some soccer and softball players with us that were working on their speed. So how to run correctly or sprint correctly. We've also gone to some of the schools. I've been to a couple of high schools to work with their track athletes. Actually in Springfield, had a soccer player contact me and put together a highlight tape for him for college. Also work with kids on how to get recruited and talk them through that process of, you know, what's the best plan to get recruited. And we look at it as not a school reaching out to you, but for you reaching out to colleges so that way you can find the college that best fits you and not go to some place just because they're offering money. It's about being happy with not only the sport, but you know, college life and your major and that kind of thing.
Well, the kids really have to be proactive in the recruiting game now, don't they?
Oh, yeah. You have to get out in front of it and not wait. Because if you wait, you might miss out. And so it's really important to make sure you're doing your own research on the school, on the coaches, and that kind of thing.
Well, hey, before I let you go, let's get back to the book. Yep. If anybody in our audience is interested in getting the book, what's the easiest way for them to get it?
Yeah, so you know, the book does have a worksheet that goes along with it on our website, as you mentioned, tjjumper.com. If you go to our book section, you click on it, and you can download it there. But you can go to Amazon and type in my name, TJ Jumper, or Jump and Shout book, and it'll pull up. It's $14.99 for a softback book, and it's, I believe, $4.99 for the Kindle version.
Kindle?
Okay. Yep. It'll be coming out on the Apple version of Kindle or the e-reader here in the next couple of weeks. And then, or you can just go to our website and click on books and it'll give a link right to the Amazon website.
All right, TJ. Well, hey, appreciate you coming in tonight. Enjoyed hearing about it. And if I ever decide to write a book, I'm going to get a hold of you to find out, you know, what I need to do.
So. Thanks. can I just add one thing?
Oh, yeah.
If you wanted a signed copy, just reach out to us at jumperathletics@gmail.com and we can get you a signed copy.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, TJ.
Thank
you. All right. You're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. Gershman Mortgage is also a sponsor of the podcast. Gershman, the Midwest premier mortgage lender, is proud to be part of the Ankeny Fanatic podcast. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home, vacation home, upgrade or remodel an existing home, or refinance your current mortgage, Gershman Mortgage is here to help. With over 60 years in the mortgage industry, they have security, experience, and unmatched service. You can visit their Ankeny office. Call 515-964-5952 or visit gershman.com to get pre-approved today. Well, right now I'm going to play that interview that I pre-recorded yesterday that I mentioned earlier. So here's that interview right now.
Well, joining me on the phone right now from Omaha is a former Des Moines Lincoln girls basketball standout who went on to star at Drake before embarking on a coaching career as a graduate assistant at Minnesota Duluth. She then made coaching stops at Drake, North Dakota, and St. Louis before joining the staff at Creighton in 2015. She's now an assistant coach and the recruiting coordinator for the Blue Jays. And over the weekend, she helped her team reach the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament for the first time in program history with a 64-62 victory at number 8 Iowa in a second round game on Sunday. She is Linda Sayavongchon. Linda, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Good. I'm good, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, you bet. Well, it's been a crazy few days for you in the program. You know, have you been able to get any sleep?
Here and there, yes. You know, it's still, you know, surreal, but it was hard to sleep, definitely, Sunday night, but I think it was good that we actually had a day off yesterday, so.
Well, yeah, before we dissect what happened over the weekend and look ahead to the Sweet 16, you know, let's first go back to the end of the regular season. You guys lost your home finale to DePaul on February 27th, then lost to Seton Hall in a last-second shot in the quarterfinals of the Big East Tournament on March 5th. You know, and then you had to wait more than a week for the NCAA selection show. But it doesn't sound like you guys, you know, were too concerned about being left out of the tournament. You did get in as a number 10 seed. Is that about what you guys expected to get?
Yeah, I think... You know, I think our win, our double overtime win at Seton Hall, pretty much, we felt pretty good after that weekend because we knew that was a big road swing at St. John's, Seton Hall, and we felt really good after that road trip. And, you know, we didn't have our second leading scorer, Morgan Molly, against DePaul at home due to her broken nose. It felt like we were pretty safe in the field for, you know, several weeks after that road game at Seton Hall. So we felt pretty good. We knew we'd probably drop maybe a seed after our loss to Seton Hall in the conference tournament. But, you know, it wasn't a bad thing that we dropped to a 10 seed. We were okay with that. we felt pretty confident, but you just never know, you know, with the selection committee. And but we felt really confident in our body of work in the regular season.
Of course, going into the NCAA tournament, you guys were coming off, you know, those back-to-back losses, and you'd played only one game in about 3 weeks. Was that long layoff a concern at all, or did you guys maybe need that time to kind of regroup a little bit?
It was probably a little longer than we wanted to, but I think – But I think when you look at it the other way, after the Big East Conference tournament, our Creighton always goes right into spring break, and so our players and staff were able to kind of rejuvenate and take some time off after the conference tournament. I know a lot of our players went home for a few days, and then we didn't have them come back until, you know, that Saturday, so we could practice right before the selection show. So the format of it works out for our kids, because, you know, they go home and they take some time off, but they also are still, you know, in the gym and working out and staying in shape, because they know that there's postseason opportunities. So I think that week was very, very helpful, because they were excited. They come back excited knowing that we potentially will make the NCAA tournament.
Well, of course, your team was assigned to the Iowa City site, which was hosted by second-seeded Iowa, and then Iowa State got the number 3 seed in your region. And it turns out that you're going to play both of those teams in the tournament. We'll talk about that later. But on Selection Sunday, you know, did you think there was a good chance that you might get sent to either Iowa City or Ames?
Yes. So, you know, if you follow bracketology and all that, you know, Iowa State was being considered as a 2 seed for a while in the month of February. So we were thinking, man, we could potentially go to Ames. And when during the selection show, when Ames, when Iowa State was showed up as a 3 seed, we're like, holy cow, I wonder, you know, we were thinking, okay, Iowa probably got the 2 seed. So when Iowa popped up as a 2 seed, one of our assistant coaches, Jordan Reese, looked at me and Carly and goes, "We're going to Iowa City." And so after they announced Iowa as a 2 seed, there you go. Right after that, it was our name got called as a 10 seed. So we knew there was a possibility to go to either, and we were excited about that because we have a good fan following and a fan base, and it was an easy travel. And we have a lot of Iowa connections on our staff, so we were okay with that. It worked out great.
Well, yeah, and you have a tournament history with Iowa. I know you beat them in the NCAA tournament a few years ago. Of course, you had to win that first game to even set up that matchup. You guys opened the tournament on Friday with an 84-74 win over 7-seeded Colorado. And I know in that game, you guys got a combined 36 points off the bench from Morgan Malley and Molly Mogensen. So that was kind of the key to that win, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. You know, our history with Iowa is so interesting because we actually close scrimmage them every year in October, end of October. So that is something that I don't know that a lot of people know. And in 2018, we, you know, got paired up with them in the first round, and I'm sure neither team was thrilled about it. And this year, of course, like, it's so funny because I ran into Jan Jensen at the Iowa State tournament, Girls State tournament, and we were just talking about how both teams were playing well, and we were like, "See you in the tournament," and we were basically, we said to each other, "Well, we hope we don't see you guys in the tournament," but, and then, of course, you know, it just happened to fall that way, but we saw our names popped up, and of course, we were like, "Why does it have to be, you know, Iowa?" And I'm sure they were thinking the same thing, "Why does it have to be Creighton?" But, I mean, that's obviously something we can't control, and our team just played well, and Molly and Morgan were, Molly was tough this weekend. I think she was probably one of the unsung heroes over the weekend in both games, honestly.
Well, of course, Iowa rolled to a 31-point win over Illinois State in the opening round. I don't think too many people gave you guys much of a chance to knock them off. I think Iowa, I heard, was like a 12.5-point favorite over your team. So what gave you guys the belief that you could pull off the upset?
Well, this team is just, you know, this team is super special. And I think one of the things about this team is they just don't get rattled. They believe in each other and they trust each other. And I think what we've done over the course of the year, they just were confident. I think they were just super confident, you know, playing before. But when we were preparing for Iowa, they knew that, you know, we could beat them. And with the scrimmage every year, I think that probably gave us a confidence too. But I think our preparation and our game plan was really good in a short amount of time. And I think before the game, Flan had said, you know, there's going to be 15,000 people here, it's sold out, but we just got to stay in the moment. You know, we just got to stay in the moment. They're going to make runs. You know, the crowd's going to get into it, but we just got to stay poised and stay in the moment. And I jokingly told the players, I said, "Hey, just pretend they're cheering for you guys."
There you go.
And yeah, exactly. So our kids, man, they just are so poised and mature. And, you know, we have six sophomores, but they're mature beyond their years. And we're just really proud of how they handled themselves in such a hostile environment and was able to come away with the win.
Well, your team led most of the way before Iowa rallied to take the lead in the fourth quarter. And then, of course, former Hawkeye Lauren Jensen stepped up big for the Blue Jays. She drove for a layup with a little over a minute left and then hit a go-ahead three-pointer with 12.6 seconds remaining. Now, I can't imagine the emotions she was feeling having that kind of performance against her former team. She scored 9 of your last 10 points and finished with 19. You know, she had to be pretty fired up to return to Iowa City and play against the Hawkeyes.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some nerves with her, and I think she handled it really well. She was in every press conference, and you know how that goes, because you know the storyline, and we weren't sure as a coaching staff how she would respond and if she would feel some pressure, and I think with Lauren, she just has a really good supporting, you know, cast around her with her teammates and as coaches. And we didn't talk about it too much because we didn't want to put extra attention on it. But I think Lauren was excited for the moment. And, we weren't making as many threes in the second half. And that's Iowa adjusted their defense. And they started switching ball screens. And, you know, Lauren's a three-level scorer, so Flan called her number, and this is what's awesome about Flan is Flan called her number towards the end of the game for those plays that you had mentioned, and we just put her in a simple ball screen to get a switch with Sonano, and we just threw the ball right back to her to let her play one-on-one, and that's where, you know, she scored the last, whatever, 9 out of 10 points, and with a game-winning, or, you know, the game-winning shot, so it was just unbelievable. I mean, it's we're super happy for Lauren, and you couldn't have scripted it a better way. It's just, like Flan said, it's just a storybook.
Oh, for sure. Well, yeah, another key to your win was your team's defensive effort against NCAA scoring and assist leader Caitlin Clark. She was held to a season-low 15 points on 4 of 19 shooting. Now, I only saw a little bit of the game, but it looked like your strategy was often to double-team her and force her to give the ball, you know, up. Was that the strategy going in to make someone other than Clark beat you?
Yes, that was part of the game plan. You know, and our kids are very familiar with Iowa, obviously, with the scrimmage and everything, but our kids watch a lot of basketball, too. I keep calling them kids, but they're young women. We are so familiar with them. We've watched them play a lot. They play a lot, you know, in the national spotlight and on national TV. So we knew, obviously, Clark is a very, very good player, but she has the ball in her hands a lot as a playmaker, as a scorer. So, you know, we talked about in our game plan that we had three guard defenders on her team that we could just rotate under her because we knew she was going to play the whole game, Clark. And so one of the ways we wanted to kind of maybe wear her down a little bit was to just rotate three guard defenders on her, and all three are different. And we said, look, she's going to make tough shots, okay? She's a really good player. She's going to make tough shots. We just got to, you know, limit her to what she wants to do, and keep the ball out of her hands once she gives it up. And I think our kids did a really, really good job on her. And I think over the course of the game, it really wore her down, because those three kids didn't play more than 28 minutes, I believe, the three guards that we had rotate on her. And I think that was kind of the key of the game.
Well, this was obviously an historic win for the program, but, you know, the nature of the tournament is that you really don't have much time to enjoy a win because you got another game to prepare for right away. So did Coach Flannery allow the team to celebrate the victory a little bit, or did you guys have to turn your attention to Iowa State right away?
No. Well, we didn't know we were going to play anyway because they played later that night. So that, we celebrated. I mean, that's the first Sweet 16, you know, for the program, and the way we wanted, thrilling fashion, in a hostile environment, in a sold-out crowd. It was, Flan's really good about that, too, of just, hey, enjoy it, you know, live in the moment. Then the next day, you know, we'll start focusing on Iowa State. But, you know, yesterday we had the day off, so we had to give our kids a day off. So that was really good, too. And it allowed us coaches to kind of regroup and get film and watch film of Iowa State, because when we got back on campus on Sunday night, that's when Iowa State and Georgia had just started their game. So
we probably got a chance to see that game. Of course, the Cyclones just rolled over Georgia, and now you'll play them on Friday in the regional semifinal at Greensboro, North Carolina. They obviously have a great player, an All-American, Ashley Jones, but she was just one of four players to score in double figures in that game. You know, so this is a team with a lot of weapons, isn't it?
Yes. They're a very good offensive team, and I think Iowa State and us, I think we're in the top three for like three-pointers made or something, top three in the country. So they have a really good team, and they have really good guards, and Ashley Jones, obviously, like you mentioned. There's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some carryover from our game versus Iowa, but our kids are ready. I think our players are, you know, are looking at this game like, you know, we have a really good chance in being competitive and potentially winning, but, you know, that's why you play the game. So I think our kids are going to be well prepared. I think Iowa State's going to be well prepared and well coached, and I think it's just going to be a really good basketball game on Friday night.
Well, after playing at Iowa City, I'm sure you guys are happy to be playing at a true neutral site, huh?
Yes, yes. That'd be nice. It's just, I wish we didn't have to go all the way to North Carolina to play Iowa State. But, you know, it's a neutral court. It's going to be a fun game. And again, both teams are going to be very well prepared, well coached, and it's going to be a good basketball game.
Well, I don't want you to get too specific with your scouting report, but just in general, I mean, what are you guys going to have to do to pull off the upset?
Well, I think you got to be concerned with the three-point line. You know, it's almost like guarding our own team. You can't let their guards just get comfortable from the three. And they're going to be scout. You know, they're going to be scout. Both teams are going to be scout heavy defensively. I think there's some similar styles there between us and Iowa State. I just think the 3-point line is going to be super important as far as defending.
Well, Helena, before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you a quick question about Connie Yori, since she's so well-known to our Ankeny audience. Connie, of course, was a legendary player at Creighton who eventually returned to her alma mater as head coach and then enjoyed a long and successful career at Nebraska before returning to Creighton 4 years ago as a program advisor. You know, I'm sure Connie really enjoyed that win over the Hawkeyes because she and Iowa coach Lisa Bluter have had so many battles over the years. But what has Connie done for you in the program since she rejoined the staff in 2018? You know, where do you feel like her expertise sticks out the most?
I just think, you know, she's obviously been a very, very successful head coach. So she brings kind of that head coach experience to her staff with, you know, me, Carly, and Jordan as younger assistants. She brings so much experience and so much knowledge and as a head coach. And her and Flan know Lisa Bluter and Jan Jensen very, very well. Our staff knows her staff really well. And just her expertise. And so she sees things differently than our assistants do. And so that's where she's been very, very helpful.
All right, Linda. Well, hey, I really appreciate your time today. I know it's a busy time of year for you guys. So good luck on the game on Friday.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
You bet.
All right, you've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker MidAmerica. At Coldwell Banker, you're not one of many clients, you're our most important client. We listen to your needs to develop long-lasting relationships and provide the best services, professional support, and resources in the industry. We're constantly exploring new and innovative ways to elevate your experience and exceed your expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. Well, I want to thank my two guests again for giving up their time this week. We had TJ Jumper in studio to talk about his new book, and we also had Linda Sayavon-Chong, the Creighton assistant, joining me on the phone yesterday. I enjoyed both of those conversations. So come back next week for another edition of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. We'll be previewing the girls' soccer season with both coaches from Ankeny and Centennial, and we'll also be talking about the Crosstown Invitational, which will open up the season for both teams next weekend.